run if you have enough power and money. But in the long run, logic and honesty will defeat power politics and bribery.
I remember I used to work for a guy who ironically just passed away a few months ago in public television. He used to hang a sign outside of his door, and he said, eventually, old age and treachery will outdo youth and intelligence.
Well, I say honesty actually does work in the long run, but it can be a rough go until you get there.
Well, that's typically because of the fact that it sooner or later collapses of its own weight. Socialism, for example, as an economic system, always collapses of its own weight. But like you say, it can be a pretty rough go getting there and hurting a lot of people in the process.
Amen.
So what does, when we say the right questions, the truth, meaning in the public debate, what are we looking at?
Well, it's a way of analyzing problems of all kinds. Whenever there's a controversy, the way to get to the right answer, usually, or I would say always, is not to try to jump straight to the answer. If you jump straight to the answer, you're apt not to make sure that you have asked the right questions first. So if you begin by saying, what are the right questions, and are careful to ask them in the right order, then you will eventually find your way home to the right answer, and you can guide public discussion in healthy directions that lead to truth. And that's what I'm attempting to do and to show other people how to do.
Yeah, it would seem like much of the conversation now has been to obfuscate truth.
Exactly.
And to blur the issues so that certain...
When powerful people like the Mandarins have the answers that they want and can impose them on society, they don't want people to be asking the right questions. That threatens their power and their money.
Yeah, but it's so fun being iconoclastic, isn't it? If you had to ask, when we look at the whole issue now, the evolution issue, especially from the field of intelligent design, what would the right questions and ordering of the debate now take at lines?
Well, I have attempted to guide the debate by addressing the two definitions of science. And so the right question is, what is the definition of science? Is it a you asked it pretty well yourself, frankly. What is the definition of science?
Okay.
Is it a search for truth on the one hand, or a search for naturalistic explanations, even if those explanations are not true? That would be an excellent way to start out, and indeed that is the way I do attempt to start.
And then proceed from there to where?
Well, once you have the two possibilities, then you want to ask, why have you chosen one, the naturalistic explanations, rather than the other? And then the answer to that will bring up new questions. Like I said, you have to ask them in the right order. Why do you prefer naturalistic answers to true answers? Now, by this time, you've already got the person in a lot of trouble and fumbling around.
Because they prefer naturalistic as opposed to true answers.
Yes.
Can't you be accused of prejudicing the issue by doing that?
No. Well, that's why you have to start with the prior question. You have to get them to admit that there are the two possibilities, and they've chosen one rather than the other.
Okay. Which is sort of what I said, because there's empirical evidence, and then there's truth, which is a bigger circle around it, that which can be empirically verified.
Well, yes. But, of course, you don't want to concede that the Darwinists have found answers that are empirically verified, because they haven't.
Right.
So you'll get them to say something like that, and then you can say, well, how has it been empirically verified that natural selection is a creative force so powerful that it can produce innovations like the eye, the ear, and the immune system if they did not exist before? How does it create these things, and how has that been empirically verified? Well, at that point, pretty soon you're going to get an answer of the kind that you got from that man on the bus. He'll say, well, it hasn't exactly been verified, but it has to be true because we're here.
And we have these structures, and they work.
These structures exist.
Yeah,
and
right.
There's no other way they could have come into existence. So this is what a good cross-examiner does in a courtroom, is to try to back the witness into the position that he doesn't want to admit because it's indefensible.
Even though the witness knows it from the start anyway.
Yes, and you see, that's why, as I tell people always, asking the right questions is not an innocent activity. It is a profoundly revolutionary activity when you are up against power holders who do not want to know the truth and certainly don't want you to know it, because what they want is the kind of answers that provide protection for the power and wealth and status that they enjoy. That's what they want.
Is the question answering occurring? I know there are some people that have provided high school students with X number of questions to ask your biology student. As a matter of fact, that was Joe Baker's whole lawsuit, if you recall, mm-hmm. because he was passing these around, that it was causing, shall we say, quite a row.
Yes.
Because they weren't answerable. So rather than answer the hard questions, they say, well, you can't pass these around anymore. See, now notice that's the old inquisitional format.
That's what does happen, and what we in the intelligent design movement are trying to do is to get around the mandarins and get this kind of question and the problem.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here at the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, as our producer is getting Karen Lee Bixman on line one, and we already have right now on line six our good friend John Loeffler. And the reason we're going to be doing this program tonight, ordinarily why Pastor Doug Vandermeulen does the Wednesday evening program, but he was laid up this evening. And Karen Lee had put out a special bulletin to people who subscribed to her investigative reporter newsletter, got this last night by fax, and she is very concerned that we are facing the possibility of a terrorist attack in the very near future. She's concerned about the status of our economy. Well, I don't know when the terrorist attack is coming. I'm sure there will be other terrorist attacks, and one may be very imminent, but then we talk to John, and John is getting a lot of information out of England. Now, you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that when you read your local newspaper, you're not getting the news. You're getting what somebody wants you to get. If you really want to find out what's going on in America and throughout the world, you read the foreign newspapers. You certainly don't read most American newspapers. And so There are a lot of things happening in Great Britain, in Europe, elsewhere in the world, that foretell a coming crisis situation as far as the terrorists are concerned. Now, you have to understand that we're really not trying to stop the terrorists at all. I mean, the facade, you go to the airport, they check you out, they take every 30th person or 20th person or 10th person, the little old 90-year-old lady, and they search her and they go over with a wand and... but we're still allowing, and we have until very, very recently, people to come into this country from Saudi Arabia completely without restriction, despite the fact that 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. Had the laws of this country been enforced, there certainly would have been no problem at all, because none of these people would have been allowed into the country. When they got their visas, they're supposed to put down where they're going to be staying. Only one of them gave an address. All the rest of them, New York or, you're going to be staying in New York. They were allowed to come into this country with invalid visas. And, of course, the woman who did that was given a nice promotion afterwards. So, and, of course, up until at least August of this year, almost a year after the attack, anybody who wanted to come into this country from Saudi Arabia was allowed in, even though there is a lawsuit against Saudi Arabian leaders, several of the princes there, for their financing Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And, of course, our borders are still open. People are coming in, and increasingly large numbers of people from the Middle East are coming in through our southern borders, and we're not trying to stop it. And we know from a recent issue of Joe Ferris magazine, of course, he's World Net Daily, that, when the INS officers, the Immigration and Naturalization officers, try to identify Muslims who are in this country illegally, violating our laws, why they're told not to send them back to where they came from. They're not to try to enforce our laws at all, but to leave people who are here illegally and who may well be terrorists right here in this country. Well, there's so many uncertain things. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Good to hear you.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you tell us, what you're hearing and why you're concerned that we may be moving into some difficult times. Now, we can't say with any absolute certainty, but there's certainly a lot of warning flags out there, aren't there?
Well, there are. Whenever we evaluate information here, I've got a three-rule system. One is what you call general rumor, background noise, that type of thing, so it's worth probably keeping your ears open for. Two is above the level of a rumor, but you really can't quite put a story together. Three is what you generally go public with. And I think what we're hearing out of Europe is somewhere sliding between a two and a three right now. I got a call. I know this is sort of parallel. I know Karen Lee Bixman began getting calls from her contacts in Europe. I maintain contacts with I Spy magazine, which does a lot of stuff on intelligence. They just did an absolute excellent article by Charles Key, who authored it, about Oklahoma City and the latest details on the Iraqi connection between the bombing of the Moore office building and Iraq. But what's going on right now is, he says, and he lives in London, and he said things are just going a little loony here. The RAF has been conducting night training missions over populated areas, so much so they've been apologizing and telling people, they'll be over shortly. He said there are just important troop movements in various parts of the country, and he used to be involved with security out at Heathrow, and apparently we've got security and firemen strikes starting there, but he said the underground scuttlebutt about that is that these are being staged in order to be able to shut down Heathrow Airport on November 27th, 28th, somewhere right around there, which, of course, is our Thanksgiving Day, because they want to be able to keep jumbo jets out of the air on those dates. So also there was an article that came out recently which said that one Porta nuke had most likely already been spirited into Great Britain, and we may be talking possibly more about a real genuine nuclear type of device rather than one of these dirty bombs we've been talking about all this time. So that's sort of the start of the what we call the scuttlebutt, but it's above the level of just sort of a rumor type of thing. There's definitely something going on. And then that story that said was then withdrawn, so of course everybody's going, no, wait a minute, you said this and then you didn't say that. And then And frankly, Dr. Stan, it has about the same feeling as it did a month before 9/11 when we began to pick up the same underground rumblings ahead of time. So,
in other words, there was a lot of information out there. I know that certainly David Schiffers had been told there was going to be an attack on Lower Manhattan 6 weeks before September 11th. Our friend Garth Nicholson says that he was told by FBI agents who were afraid to come forward on their own there would be an attack on the 11th of September, but it would be on the Pentagon. We know, of course, that the night before the attack, the mayor of San Francisco was warned not to fly the following day, that high Defense Department officials canceled their flights for the 11th of September on the 10th. And so obviously some people knew that something big was coming down. But, of course, the government said, who could have possibly suspected that, which, of course, is simply a cover. That is why the administration is doing everything they can to block an independent investigation of what happened. Congress wants to investigate, and they're not being allowed to. We have Karen Lee on the line.
Yeah.
Hi, Karen Lee. How are you?
Just fine.
All right, fine. Now, did you hear what John had to say?
I just came on about a minute ago, so I don't know how much he covered.
Well, he was covering the fact that there's a lot of apparently troop movements over in Great Britain. The RAF is guarding the skies over London on a regular basis. And he was quoting a man named Chris Mundy, who works for a magazine over there. I would suppose it would be very similar to the magazine that comes out of Canada. And it's certainly put out by people who are trying to get people to realize that there are forces working behind the scenes manipulating both the governments of the West and this whole world terrorist movement.
Yeah, well, aside from, I think, what our private intelligence sources are telling us, there's just enough printed information overseas to alarm a normal person. And as you know, Dr. Stan, I sent out a special email alert last night to all my subscribers. If for nothing else, I wanted to give them a heads up. I wanted to make sure that people are prepared because the reports that I have quoted from overseas indicate that there is going to be a simultaneous attack on three continents, United States, Europe, and who knows where else. There is some speculation as to where that third location might be. And they're expecting that before the end of the month. And I think as John alluded to, I did hear that. He said probably around Thanksgiving. But yet they say it could happen at any time. Sources that I have received have pretty much patterned what John has said, that there are snipers on the airport at Heathrow, the RAF, circling the skies. And even the American intelligence community, I've talked to a few people that give me information. His exact quote was that the American intelligence community is in a frenzied panic right now. They know that something big is up. And my question continually has been, why are we not hearing anything out of Washington and the Office of Homeland Security? We can speculate why we might not have heard anything. But I was told briefly this morning there was a little blip on this on Fox News. Maybe they're trying to get this out in a very slow pattern, leak that out. But something is definitely afoot, and I think the very fact that we have the British Prime Minister, the French Prime Minister has come out and warned the people of imminent attacks before Christmas, I would agree with John's assessment. What we have here is something much, much above the rumor stage, and I think that this has a lot of credence behind it.
Well, somebody had said something about an attack on America's feast day. Who was that, and what's the background of that remark?
John, I know. You want to handle that?
No, because I don't remember.
Actually, it came out of bin Laden's speech.
Was this the recent one that was put
out? Yes, he said that he alluded to the fact that there would be retaliation on America's feast day. Mm-hmm.
All right. And of course, that would be probably Thanksgiving. That would be America's feast day. So obviously, now whether this is simply all smoke and mirrors to get us all scared and get us all upset, or whether there is something real coming down, we're going to know very, very soon.
If it was smoke and mirrors, you know, the way I am, you know, the position of a reporter is what you have to do. You sit here and you take all the information, all the data, you assess it, and you try to figure out what's going on. You know, do you go with this? There's a whole lot of decision-making going on in this, and I'm always trying to second-guess or look behind what's going on. The very fact that the U.S. government has not said anything about this, these pronouncements have been made in Europe, I think there is a lot more to this than just a rumor, than just smoke and mirrors. I honestly believe that something is afoot. Perhaps the Office of Homeland Security, all the signals that they have given out in the past that have ended up going nowhere, they've been false rumors. It's been like the little boy that cried wolf. If they did that now, would the American people really believe them when they have such a poor track record at this point in time? I do not believe, even if this does come down by the end of the month, I don't believe we will ever hear a warning out of Washington about this happening. I think in that light, the American government would probably look better if they didn't warn the people. There's my own theory behind that. But my whole point in getting this information out to people, Dr. Stan, too many people in the Patriot community have still been sitting on the fence. I've talked to people that don't even have a gallon of stored water in their home, that have less than a week's supply of food. I guess my whole purpose in doing this is to shake people up enough that they will finally do something and realize that this is getting very, very close, and they better take some action.
Well, I certainly agree that every American and everybody who listens to our program should have emergency medical supplies, should have emergency food and water supplies on hand, because we are living in a very, very uncertain world. And, everything changed on September 11th. It really changed long before that, but certainly that was the wake-up signal. Everybody should have understood that we are under attack. Now, we can argue as to why the Arabs hate us and the background of that attack, but there is no question that there really is a whole nation of people with a religious belief that actually encourages violence. And you know, it's amazing how we see this thing handled. Here we have the sniper and his right-hand man, Mavo, I guess it is. Here they are Islamic converts. Certainly Muhammad had actually worked for Louis Farrakhan, who was part of this world Islamic movement, very close to Saddam Hussein and to Gaddafi. And Muhammad had worked for him as a security guard on some of the meetings he'd had. And yet these people are out there killing Americans up in Washington, in Maryland, and in Virginia. And, of course, anybody who wants to suggest that this is terrorists, that these are Islamic terrorists, we just can't figure out why they did it. Well, why would any rational person do what they did? Because they were filled with hatred, and openly they supported Osama bin Laden and the attack on the Twin Towers, and yet that aspect of it is totally played down, and they're burying the reality of what really happened with a mountain of paper and a mountain of commentary, and they put out so much material you can't see the simple fact. Converts to Islam hate America, support the Islamic terrorist movement, kill 10 Americans. Oh, no, it has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. We want to assure you of that. And they're simply lying to the American people again.
Well,
as they lied about what happened at the Oklahoma City bombing, as they lied about the downing of TW-800, and the Islamic terrorists took full credit for that. If you doubt that, get the book Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War Against America by Ramzi Yousef, the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism, and they totally blocked that out in America, and they consistently lie to the American people, constantly downplaying the Islamic terrorist connection with all these things going on until, of course, it will be too late.
John, you want to jump in here, or I will?
No, I was thinking that one of the things that's important to understand is part of this, I mean, there are everything. All of this needs to be seen in multiple levels, almost like the movie The Matrix. There are different things going on at each level, and they're all interactive. At the one level, you have the issue of terrorism, that there really are people who hate us. At the next level, globalists just love this type of stuff because it gets them, lets them build bigger government and more draconian controls and things of that nature. One of the other levels that we're seeing, really, is a breakdown of the American mind and its ability to think critically due to all of the relativistic values we have been given and politically correct thought. And what's happening is politically correct thought is trumping reality. And even in the face of what happened on 9/11 and the subsequent events and things that are going on elsewhere, we still can't see clearly, as you're saying, Dr. Stan, who the enemies are, because we're not allowed to make moral judgments anymore. Remember, that's been the whole tenet of the moral relativism. We can't make moral judgments about different people. They see it through their filters, and their filters are just as valid as our filters, but we haven't figured out that sometimes people see through their filters that they want to kill you.
And, of course, you know, it's apropos of that. And I'm going to let Karen Lee come in. But recently, of course, we know the president keeps telling us Islam, means love, and Islam is a religion of love. And then, of course, we have Jerry Falwell. And Jerry Falwell gets up and says, Muhammad was a terrorist. And, of course, he really was. He headed these marauding bands and went around killing, raping, and pillaging. But, because he said that, the Muslim leaders, one of the key Muslim leaders said, what a terrible thing to say about the Prophet. Jerry Falwell has to be killed. And, of course, they've actually put out contracts. They've suggested that Muslims kill both Jerry Falwell and several other American religious leaders who have the audacity to say that this is a terrorist religion.
Ironically, Dr. Stan, thus proving that Jerry Falwell was correct.
Of course it is. But you see, nobody points out, I mean, if just because you express an opinion, they're going to kill you, doesn't that suggest that maybe they truly are violent terrorists? But, of course, I may be risking my life by saying this sort of thing, but somebody has to say that. Can't you see Jerry Falwell says they're terrorists, and they say, what a terrible thing, there's no truth to it, that's why we're going to have you killed, and we're going to put a contract out on you. And, of course, then Jerry Falwell has to come back and apologize once again. I wish he'd just say things as they are, because he's usually right, but I wish he'd quit apologizing for being right. Karen Lee, what are your thoughts?
I'd like to be the contrarian in all of this.
All right, you go ahead.
As I usually am, I usually ride shotgun way out ahead of everyone, as my my normal thing to do.
That's why she's always shooting me in the foot.
That's right. I guess I look at things from a total different perspective, and when I am looking at this whole situation, and I think you would both agree with me, we would not have a situation where we would even have to worry about terrorism and so forth if our government, if our CIA had not been involved in this to begin with. So while we do have to talk about terrorism, we have to talk about the situation as it is today. We have to be mindful that the powers that be, none of this would be happening if it had not been allowed to happen. And I believe that everything is being orchestrated. These terror attacks, whether it be the market crash, the war, this is all being orchestrated on a very fine timetable. Unfortunately, we don't have the schedule. We just sort of know about when the train is going to come into the station. Everything is done for a purpose. I'm going to totally disagree with you on your assessment, Dr. Stan, of what happened with the sniper shooting. I believe that the two men involved were involved in the mine program. I believe that was done with full intent and purpose. Number one, to use psychological warfare to make people think that be anywhere now and you're not safe. The other incident is usually when something like this occurs, they pass some sort of gun control legislation. In this instance, they involved the DOD. They used military helicopters and surveillance. thus breaking posse comitatus. These are usually a test case, and this was. Nobody even blinked an eye. So therefore, they can now have military in the streets, and people won't think twice about it.
All right. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree, remember this is talk radio. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we're talking about the reports that are coming in from intelligence officers, both in this country and certainly over in Europe, suggesting that there is about to be a terrorist attack. But our government is not doing what would be logical. I mean, if we were really expecting a terrorist attack on the infrastructure of America, you would call out the National Guard. You would have these people not standing around the airport looking bored. You would have them at the major facilities to protect the infrastructure of our society. And I want to tell our listeners that they are planning on doing that, but only after the coming terrorist attack. Don Rumsfeld has said they're going to mobilize 250,000 of our National Guard to guard the infrastructure of our society when we go to a war with Iraq. Ladies and gentlemen, we're already at war with Iraq. We've been bombing Iraq, since 1991. When you put an embargo on a nation, that is an act of war. So we've always been at war with Iraq. Only trouble is, those of you who studied what's gone on know that from 1983 to 1990, we financed Saddam Hussein. We gave him the chemical and biological warfare agents. We gave him massive loans, agricultural loans. They took the agricultural products, sold them on the world market. We gave him another $5 billion loan from some little bank down in the south. There was always means of getting money to Saddam Hussein so he could build up his military. And then, of course, we go to war with Saddam Hussein. And then after we end the war, we could have taken Saddam and arrested him and tried him for war crimes. We leave him in power. 1993, the Iraqi military wants to overthrow him. We tell Saddam or let him know, and they arrest the military officers and torture them to death. Same thing happens again in 1995. Now, where can you verify what I've said? The book, See No Evil, by Robert Baer. It was actually, he was a CIA agent. The CIA actually approved the book. And you can even see where they censored all the names they censored out. Those are left there, so you can actually read them in the book. And I think that there's much in that book to suggest that it's quite accurate. And now, of course, after doing everything we can to prevent the Iraqi military from overthrowing Saddam Hussein, now we're going to go to war with Saddam Hussein. And I agree with you, Karen Lee. I believe this is all scripted. And the tragedy is the young men who will fight and bleed and suffer and die, the civilians who will be killed and maimed, have no idea what this is all about. Okay, Karen Lee, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Well, I don't know if we're going into a break now or what.
No, we've got 4 minutes. Well, tell you what, we've got Ralph calling from, of all places, Pacific Grove. Hi, Ralph, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Do you have a question or comment?
A couple of comments, just some different slants on looking at things. I hear your alarm about the financial situation, and I agree, and it seems imminent, and also the curious situation of us moving out to war whenever we're looking at such a catastrophic approach of financial doom. Well, I think that what's happening is they're raising the army and moving them to the two largest military posts that have been built in over 60 years, I think, that have been built over there. And they'll have to raise the military and move it out of the country before the economic collapse.
And are you talking about our military?
Yes.
All right, fine.
Because our military will then be the military that controls the space weaponry. All right, once that's under their firm control, they will be the masters of the earth.
Well, right now, of course, we can take out anybody we want to with those Predator planes, even in another country.
Well, they've got these, the news is breaking on non-lethal weapons. I've spoken before about the new microwave pulse, ELF pulse weaponry.
You mean the one that'll make your skin on your whole body just sort of evaporate and burn, right?
That is the least of what they're going to be capable of.
And the lasers, it'll blind you. Oh, it's non-lethal, though. It just burns you to death and blinds you, but it won't kill you.
Well, there are other things and other wavelengths that will achieve different results.
Well, okay.
That.
Okay, fine. Did you have a point or a question you'd like
well,
to
Well, the the point is that it seems a little bit oxymoronic what's happening right now, but I do believe that that's what's, that our military, I know that the whole National Guard and everyone's mobilized now.
It's, right.
They're all moving out. They're loading up and moving out. They're flying out of the local airports, and, well, it's happening in Europe. And,
no,
but what I'm trying to say that I think that the economic scene is being held open until the military can be raised, because if you have financial ruin in the country going down, it's going to be very difficult to get all your National Guard and state militias to show up.
Are you suggesting that there's going to be civil unrest in America with the economic collapse that is coming?
I predict a maroon military force in the Middle East with almost total economic collapse in the United States, except for a few select regions.
All right. Well, that, thank you very much. Let's get Karen Lee's response to that, because, of course, she's been talking about that for some time. Go ahead, Karen Lee.
Oh, well, I totally agree. We will have once this economy collapses, we will have a situation where martial law will be evoked, because all you have to do is have a short period of time where people can't, they don't get their welfare checks, they can't go to the grocery stores, they have no money, they can't get their money out of the banks. You will have riots in the streets.
Well, of course, we saw that in Argentina within
That's
the last
right.
6 months.
And we will see the same thing repeated here. If we go the way of the Office of Homeland Security, you will have your National Guard, which will, in essence, be your U.S. police force, but you will have military in the streets as well. So I do agree with his assessment of that.
All right. Well, Ralph is obviously watching very carefully what's going on, and certainly one of the well-informed people. And I think that we are in very serious economic straits. We are, as someone said, we've just had the mother of all bull markets. We're now in the mother of all bear markets. We'll be back in just 3 minutes with our two guests. We welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you, of course, that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And also, of course, I want to remind you about the conference that's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be on the 23rd. That's a week from Saturday. It's all day long. We're going to talk about what's happening financially. We're going to talk about, certainly, the problems that we face as far as biological warfare and the importance of being prepared for that. And then, of course, we're going to talk about what's happening spiritually. Because if you're not prepared spiritually for what lies ahead, you're not going to survive. And so, certain things that should be done from the financial point of view, a great deal that can be done from the physical and health point of view. And all of this is going to be covered in an all-day-long session. Now, we need to know if you're going to be interested in coming, because there's going to be a lunch served. We're putting together the syllabuses. We're making 100 syllabuses, and we already have probably pretty close to that number coming. So anyway, we hope that you'll want to be there. I promise you that it will be an exciting day. The doors will open at 8 o'clock in the morning. The program will begin at 8:45 in the morning. You have an opportunity to meet the people who think the way that you do, will be there. And so if you'd like to come join us at the Radio Liberty conference, where we're going to talk about preparation for what lies ahead, our telephone number is 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, for those of you who can't make it, I want to remind you that you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters if you'd like to get a free copy of our, I think probably our October newsletter is as good as you're going to find. It's basically a newsletter which contains the testimony before the Senate Select Committee of Kristen Breitweiser. Her husband, Ron, died in the South Tower, and she's testifying before the United States, members of the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. Of course, the video cameras are shooting, the networks are there, the reporters are there, and totally blacked out what she said from the major media. And so we give you the entire text of her testimony. It's touching, it's to the point, and I really think that what it becomes very, very obvious as you read this, that there's a great deal that what we are not being told. And so if you'd like a copy of Kristen Breitweiser's testimony, why, please give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't had a copy before, why, we'd be glad to get one for you. I'm going to have to ask our producer if he can check both lines, because I think we've lost one of our two guests. We'll want to get them back on here because we have a lot more to cover. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And so we've got Karen Lee still on the line.
Yes.
And maybe if you could call John. I think we lost John Leffler. Let's get him back on again. Well, Karen Lee, let's talk a little bit about the financial situation, because I think that, you know, as you've been writing about this for some time, most Americans think, well, you know, the market's going to turn around any time now. Everything's just fine. You know, or this is just a little temporary approachment. Look at this run-up in the stock market we had beginning here about the middle of October. Things are really not so bad. But, of course, what's the truth about what's going on?
Dr. Stan, things are so bad. We literally, I have talked about this so much. I've been on your show. I have talked about the situation with the banks. The banks are in meltdown. There are the fourth largest bank in Switzerland is being bailed out. The third largest bank, Commerce Bank in Germany, has been bailed out by the central bank. The Bank of Japan came in and put money into the Japanese banks. J.P. Morgan is now receiving money from the Fed.
J.P. Morgan is probably the largest bank in the United States.
That's right, with the largest load of derivatives, over $28 trillion in derivatives.
Yeah, you're talking about trillion, like T trillion?
Like T, right. Yeah, T trillion. The whole global situation is very, very bad when it comes to the banking situation. And if we had no other event, not a terrorist event, a war, or anything else, this economy would come down, I believe, due to banking failures. I believe that it almost came down on the 10th of October. Had Commerce Bank, J.P. Morgan, and the Japanese banks not been bailed out on that day, I believe that House of Cards would come down. But it is very bad. We have consumer confidence is at the lowest point in 9 years. We have a record number of mortgages that are being foreclosed. Homes, people are losing their homes. We have bankruptcies, record number of bankruptcies. And so the economic situation is very bad, but yet most people just look at the market, and if it goes up or it doesn't fall, or they think everything is just fine by what happens at the Dow Jones. But companies are continuing to lay off. They're trying to tell us that the unemployment rate's only about 5.7%. It's probably closer in reality to about 13%. 1 in 10 Americans now are out of work. So the situation is very bad, but as I mentioned, I believe that it is being held up for a purpose, for a time, and this is all a timed plan scenario. I think there is much, much more going on behind the scenes, Dr. Stan, than we will ever know.
Well, I agree with you, and of course, I think that people have to really look objectively at what's happening. And you see our great corporations, Enron, Global Crossing, WorldCom, you know, these companies have just simply lost literally tens of billions of dollars of value, and they've just disappeared. And we find, you know, General Motors owns 20% of Fiat. Fiat just declared a $2 billion loan this year, loss this year. Fiat wants to lay off 7,000 workers because, of course, their cars aren't selling. And the Italian government has said, you can't lay off your workers because we don't have the money to pay them unemployment insurance. They'll be out in the streets demonstrating and breaking things and burning things if you lay them off. So you can't close your plants down even though you're losing money. Of course, we find General Motors has one of the largest corporations in the world. has a $12.5 billion deficit in the money they owe their pension fund, because they've been not putting money in the pension fund. They've been making money in the pension fund because they were invested in Enron and Global Crossing and all these crazy stocks, and now that those have tanked out, suddenly they are $12.5 billion behind in what they owe the pension funds. They have to fund that before they can show a profit. So they're going to be working and working and working for a good long while to make up the money just to break even with the pension funds.
Well, you and I have talked about this derivative situation and how the banks are going to go under and people are going to lose their pension funds. And again, Dr. Stan, I believe that these events that are going to be taking place really will be almost concurrent or simultaneous. I don't believe for one minute that the Bush administration is going to allow the stock market and economy to collapse and make it appear that they are at fault. I believe that there will have to be something else happen. If that be a terrorist event, if it something overseas, a banking collapse overseas, there will have to be something that they can put the blame on.
We'll blame it on that wicked Osama bin Laden.
That's right.
Or the wicked Saddam Hussein. John, what are your thoughts about that? I know that you've been watching the market very, very closely, and you work closely with Jim Poplava, don't you?
Producing his weekly
right.
show.
Okay.
What is interesting is after 9/11, a lot of the companies, you know, Enron blew up and successive scandals, etc. But a lot of our companies in this country had huge amounts of losses, which they had delayed writing off. They were just waiting for an excuse to write it off. And after 9/11, you can just see this by going to check their P&L statements and reports to shareholders and things like that. And after 9/11, why this was the perfect excuse they had, they blamed the downturn in business on 9/11, and they told people that was the reason that we did it, and that's why we had this drop in income. In reality, they had been waiting all along for a time to write this type of stuff off. Probably, as you were talking about the pension funds in Italy, or the unemployment compensation in Italy, you know, the hardest thing I try to drive home to Americans is that our government and every government in the world has always historically reneged on all of their financial promises to their citizens. They make promises, but ultimately they always break them. And we are going to discover that about the Social Security Fund. Right now it is one of those political footballs you just can't touch. And there are warm promises that the Social Security Fund is going to stay intact, et cetera, et cetera. It cannot, because of the mathematical impossibility that we're now facing. We have a baby boomer generation, and we have a decreasing birth rate behind us, meaning we have what's called an inverted pyramid. That means that when people go to start collecting that Social Security money, it is simply not going to be there for the baby boom generation. And no matter what politician promises you what, it is mathematically impossible for them to do that without soaking everybody massively or playing some other games. And at that point, I don't think games are going to be possible to play.
You know, the most amazing thing is they keep insisting there is a Social Security fund there. Of course there's a Social Security fund. Well, where's the money? Well, there isn't any money there. There are government bonds. Well, where's the money coming from, the government bonds? I mean, do you have that money someplace? Well, no, we don't have any money, but this is as solid, you can depend on it just like you can depend upon the United States government. Well, of course, you asked the boys we abandoned in Vietnam, the 1,000 or 2,000 who have either died in captivity or are still living in captivity, how much confidence they have in the United States government, and they don't have very much because, of course, they know now that they were betrayed. And the same thing is true with if there's still any of the boys left over we abandoned in Korea, or probably all those we abandoned during the First World War. I have long since perished in the labor camps of Siberia. But 25,000 we abandoned in the Second World War. And the fact they've been able to keep that from the American people is simply another reflection of the degree of control that exists today. over what the American people think. And if you doubt that, we have the government reports on that that go into that, the Helms Committee report, Foreign Relations Committee report, that is available from Radio Liberty, going into the background of the boys we abandoned in the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, and in Vietnam. And, of course, they put their faith in government, not realizing, of course, that the government had been taken over by very, very wicked people, and the good people couldn't ever get the truth out. They tried. Certainly Senator Helms tried. But I wonder how many Americans ever heard about the report put out by his committee and the Senate Foreign Relations Department. Well, I had John, you know, as we see what's happening financially, of course, Karen Lee keeps pointing to the fact that our banks are in real trouble. What's your take on that?
Well, they are in real trouble. The derivatives positions are horrible. In virtually every different market where you look, we've created this giant bubble, whether it's bond markets or real estate or looking out at derivatives. There are huge amounts of wealth that exist on paper but do not exist in reality. Okay, and sooner or later, it's like a giant game of musical chairs. And so far, nobody has been able to stop the music. But as soon as the music stops, there's going to be this mad dash for positioning, and invariably a whole bunch of people are going to come up short. It's the same game that's being played in the stock market. You would not believe that people are still buying into various bonds and stocks and other issues, all hoping for a rally, all hoping for a turnaround. Jim was describing me some of the issues that he has with clients, and they're just like absolutely skittery, and every time a market goes one way or another, they flinch and try to adjust that. He said you can't invest on that basis. You have to take a position and hold it to be able to and understanding of what is actually going on. And so, ironically, this is a classic behavior pattern. You know, you can actually predict these patterns from previous blowouts and crashes. People will do this. And the name of the game right now is to keep the individual in the market. That's what keeps it afloat, promising them that there's another rally just ahead, just around the corner, or this rally's the big one, this is the bottom of the market. It's sort of amusing. I dug up some quotes from 1929, 30. The verbiage was exactly the same. They were promising people it was the bottom of the market, prosperity was just ahead, the hard times are over. You know, it was the same as the "we have nothing to fear but fear itself" type of analogy. And in reality, the stock market never recovered for the next 15 years.
What was it that President Herbert Hoover, he promised the people, two cars in every garage and a chicken in every pot, and it ended up with two chickens in every garage.
Or my favorite, my favorite quote from Herbert Hoover, March of 1930. When six businessmen came and talked to him, and they had concerns about the economic situation, and he said, "Well, gentlemen, you're too late. The Depression was over 6 months ago."
And I think that he may very well have honestly believed what he was being told, but of course he didn't understand certainly Milton Friedman says in the video we carry called "The Monopoly Men," and Milton Friedman, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, says quite openly why the Federal Reserve intentionally created this whole situation. They created the Great Depression of that time. Simply by withholding money, taking money out of circulation, and they collapse the economy. Well, that may very well in part be true. The alternative, of course, would have been to have provided money and create runaway inflation and destroy the whole system. So they had really two alternatives. They did one thing that hurt everybody. The other thing would, of course, destroyed the nation. Because as we get into worse and worse and worse financial times, as we go into deflation, the value of property begins to go down. The value of things we buy in the store has to be lowered because people aren't going to buy them otherwise. And, of course, we begin to see the countries in the Far East beginning to just dump anything here, even at less than the cost of production, in an effort to just have some money, of course, to have some money to pay their debts or to pay their people, and of course the prices then will begin to drop. And then of course you create a situation where eventually people quit buying at all, and then the only way out of that is to try to spend your way out with massive inflation. Karen Lee, do you think we're going to go down the line? First, I think we're going to have deflation, but do you think that they eventually will become desperate enough to destroy the economy with inflation?
I don't know. You know, we might have a period of both, like you are saying, but what I think we're going to see first and foremost will be a long deflationary period. I think we're starting to see that already. I'm a shopper, and I always compare prices, and I have just recently, I'm seeing things at a much lower price that I normally buy. With the exception, I think gasoline will be higher because of the fact of what's going on with Iraq once war starts and so forth. That might be a total different ballgame. But I think we are going to be in a deflationary mode, and that is already starting. But, you know, what we're talking about here tonight, Dr. Stan, possible terrorist events coming by the end of the month, and market crash. We will have our war in Iraq, I guarantee you. George W. Bush will have his war. These are very, very serious times for America, and I'm afraid that the, you know, I think of Ronald Reagan, that speech that he read in the 1964, Barry Goldwater, where he says, America's best days are still ahead of her. I wish we could say that, and unfortunately, I don't think we can say that anymore.
All right, John, what do you think about that? Do you think that we're going to have deflation? Do you think they're going to have a try to get us out of it with inflation? Do you think that America's best days are behind us?
Well, you know, the first thing I think about it is I just love these prices on cars now, nothing down and no payments in your lifetime. You know, a great time to go get a car. I think what we will see, we are actually approaching a condition where you could see at some point an inflation, the monetary supply, combination of inflation, depression, and deflation simultaneously. And I'd have to take some time to develop that theory. But either way, there's only so much more you can inflate. I can't see how you can avoid going into some kind of a deflationary type of thing at this time. I can't see that. We dropped the points again, and that was to keep the bond market afloat. That was last week. But beyond that, I'm not sure where we're headed.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. In Japan today, the discount rate is zero. In other words, that's the rate at which banks can borrow money from the Bank of Japan. Their prime interest rate is about 1.5%.
Right.
Here, our discount rate is about 1%, and our prime interest rate is about 4%. So we've got a long way to go down to try to get this economy going. But I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think that the only thing that they can do now is go into a war, and it will not be a short war, because if it was a short war, they wouldn't be able to get enough production going. And I think there's something called the war card. And when you're facing an economic crisis, what you want is a war, and then you start producing as much as you can and pumping money into the economy that way. And, of course, you hope then you're going to get enough economic growth so that you can begin employing all these people who are out of work in the free market. And in other words, the free market, you know, is collapsing, and so they hope to get a war market going. But it's simply like WPA during the Roosevelt administration. It's a lot of busy work, producing a lot of weapons that you immediately destroy them once they get over there, and then you can build more weapons and you can destroy them as well. You aren't in a situation like we are today where you have almost everybody who's going to buy a computer has already bought one. There's not that much demand for new computers. Most people do not need a new television set. They don't need a DVD. I mean, you go to the stores, a DVD, you know, there's $79.95, you know, $69.95 for a DVD player. They've got to be simply dumping these things on the market now with the hope that they can get somebody to buy them if they're cheap enough.
And right, and Dr. Stan, if we take and put a terrorist event in that mix, then you can throw the war card away. because that certainly will destroy the economy immediately.
No, but of course, if you're going to go to a war, you've got to produce goods, you know, to blow up so that you can produce more goods to blow up. And for a listener out there who thinks that is a callous and crass thing to say, let me suggest the book Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Carol Quigley. And he points out this is how the economists think. You can only have so many refrigerators and cars and homes built, and pretty soon you don't need any more. But there's an unlimited demand for weapons because you can keep destroying them, and that's the advantage of war. And he openly talks about the crass attitude that the elitists have towards war and the horrible suffering that's associated, but boy, it's sure good for the economy. What a terrible way to look at it, and yet there really are people who have no conscience or whose conscience is so totally seared, and of course they look at the economic advantages and they're unconcerned about human suffering.
Yeah.
Well, my whole hope on this, Dr. Stan, is to shake people out of their apathy, to make them understand that we are very soon going to be facing very, very serious circumstances here. And if they have not prepared physically, they need to do so. But I like to see people prepare mentally, physically, and spiritually. And I always say it. The most important thing out of all of this is that a person has a relationship with Jesus Christ, because in the times that are coming, I don't know how a person will endure without knowing the Lord. And that's what I urge everyone. This is a time to increase your prayer time, get into your Bible, and seek the Lord like you have never done before.
No, I agree with that. I certainly see what they say. Amen to that. John, what are your thoughts?
Well, ultimately, Karen is right about one thing. You know, the world will not come to an end at midnight, but we will have some rough going as we go. Other cultures have had difficult times as they went before. But Christianity, I mean, and Christ always remain. And that ultimately is the whole goal. I mean, ultimately, everybody faces his or her own personal holocaust. You know, we all die at some point or another. And the goal is to make it through life, to help each other, and to get through life with faith intact. That's pretty much the goal of the whole situation. Ironically, Dr. Stan, it really is a game. And I remember somebody asking George Soros about that. You know, Soros has made a number of moves that have wrecked various economies in different parts of the world. And someone asked him if he didn't feel guilty about that because, I mean, look, these are people and whatever. And he said, I didn't make the game. Those are just the rules. And so he just sort of ruled out moral accountability by saying it's a big game. And it really is a big game.
Yes, but there is moral accountability, and we will either stand before the bar of justice here or in the afterlife for what we've done.
That's correct. I mean, you're true. And I always point out, it really is a game. You know, the only difference is it has consequences.
Right, and when you stand before the great referee there by the pearly gates, I wouldn't want to be in George Soros's position. But Soros is a brilliant individual, a fascinating personality, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I think he was born and reared in communist Czechoslovakia, and now he's one of the richest men in the world. And recently, he was quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying that we could anticipate the American dollar would lose 30% of its value over the next several years. Now, but if we went into a recession, we would lose a great deal more than that. Now, to the average individual out there, the idea of losing 30% of the value of the dollar, you're not quite certain what that means. Well, that means, in reality, that let's say you have a $500,000 nest egg for your retirement. That means, of course, that that nest egg will be worth $300,000, and your level of affluence will have declined significantly. The other alternative would be, if we go into recession, you would lose a great deal more. And, of course, what he's really talking about is what's happened in Argentina, where people have lost two-thirds of the value of their life savings literally overnight. Within a few weeks, they were simply impoverished. And half the population of Argentina today lives in abject poverty, what was a year ago an affluent nation. What are your thoughts on that, John, and this idea of we are going to see a dramatic wipeout of the value of the American dollar, at least if George Soros is right? Do you think he's right?
I think he's right. I mean, that is the end process of all paper currencies historically in the world. And people would say, well, this is America, we're different. But how are we different?
John, we are going to have to say goodbye to our guests up there in the great state of Washington and up around where you live. Can you stay with us on to the next hour?
Sure.
Okay, how about you, Karen Lee?
Okay.
Okay, fine. Well, then I'm just going to have to say to our listeners in Washington, Oregon, northern, western Idaho, why pray for America? These are difficult times, but make sure you have a personal relationship with our Lord, as Karen Lee says, because that's really the ultimate goal in life. And when you come to the end of life, if you can say, I believed, I fought a good fight, I've followed the course, I've kept the faith, that's what it's all about. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Kevin, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Did you tell them?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295 or 464-8295. And, of course, our guest this evening, Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. And, Karen Lee, before I forget it again, I want you to get your telephone number out. We can't mention the price of your product, but we can certainly mention to people how they can get hold of it.
Okay. I do publish The Investigative Reporter. Been doing that since 1994 with a small, brief absence of illness. But that does come out every single month, and I guess I'm cutting edge, you would say, provocative to say the least. Anyone interested in the publication, they can call the office. We're usually here 9:30 to 4 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, and the number is 562-493-8957, 562-493-8957.
All right, fine. And then, of course, with us also is John Leffler of Steel on Steel. John, how can people get in touch with you or get your information?
Well, they can get a list of our programs if they call us toll-free, 1-800-TAX-JOHN, 1-800-829-5646. You can go to our website, steelonsteel.com, on the Internet.
All right. As you commented, and I love that line, people can usually remember, 1-800-TAX-JOHN. At least the IRS never forgets that. So that was really when I first heard you talking, and I've always remembered that. So I can always remember your number, but I try not to call on the 800 line. That's
nobody ever forgets it. It's right. Uncanny. People find us all the time. That's a silly number,
right.
You know.
Well, anyway, of course, we were talking about the stability of the dollar, and people really, they don't understand. I mean, we've had a dollar that has actually lost about 98% of its value over the last century, but, you know, it's been so gradual, just a couple of percent a year, people have not realized that the government planned program of stealing their wealth from them through the process of gradual inflation, which, of course, was the antithesis of our traditional system, which was based upon real value, a gold-backed dollar, or gold-backed currency. So, but of course, we've seen what happened in Argentina, we've seen what happened in Russia in the early 1990s. This thing has happened in country after country after country after country in the last few years, and people have been totally wiped out, the middle class has been totally wiped out. And we're talking about George Soros, who I think certainly knows exactly what's going to happen, talking about the dollar losing a third of its value, 30% of its value, and of course, if we go into a recession, it would lose a great deal more. I think that people have to begin thinking ahead. What happens is when we are unprepared for things and they begin to happen, we act in a panic state. When we act in a panic state, we make terrible, terrible mistakes. And, of course, we have to know what's going to happen, be able to anticipate it, and at least try to preserve part of our wealth for what lies ahead. Now, it may be we are going to lose everything we have materially. And I think you're going to have to acknowledge that this is a possibility. You don't want it to happen. It's nice to live comfortably. I like to live comfortably. But, you know, if you did, how would you survive? Well, the first thing, you'd have to have faith in your Lord. You'd have to have your family. And then, of course, you'd have to live with bare essentials. And people do that. Look what they do in Afghanistan, war after war after war. And, you know, the people have recently come from Pakistan down into Afghanistan. They find that, you know, they have absolutely nothing. And yet, of course, they can't live in Afghanistan. There are no jobs. They're moving back into Pakistan again to the refugee camps. Could this happen in America? Why? What reason should it not happen in a nation where God has withdrawn his protection from that nation? So you have to begin looking ahead to what happens if our currency loses part or literally all of its value. And believe me, this has happened in other countries. With a country where God has withdrawn his protection, why wouldn't it happen here? What are your thoughts on that, Karen?
I think there's a lot of psychological issues that we need to look at in the course of this conversation as well, Dr. Stan. I agree with you. I mean, I live here in earthquake country. In fact, all three of us do. I know Idaho has earthquakes, too. And we have our little earthquake stash in the closet with the flashlight and the batteries and the radio and, you know, just a little something to prepare us for when that quake comes. I feel so much better knowing I have that little box in the closet that I'm prepared. I think most people have that mindset. If you know what's coming, you're not panicked. You can prepare. You can act rational. That's why getting this information out to people is so very important. But one thing I want to address, because I get so many calls in my office every day, I get emails, I think there is a great deal of the population in the Patriot community. They get this information, they hear it, they try to share it with maybe their sons, daughters, relatives, friends, and people don't want to hear it. People now have become very frustrated. They don't know what to do anymore with the information that we give them. A lot of times there's a hopeless feeling. They just want to give up. And I think so we are fighting this situation on many different levels. And this is just one area I think that we need to address. What do you think about that, John?
John, are you there?
Sorry about that. I have come to the point now, it was something that you said earlier, Karen, that sort of triggered in my head. I have come to the point, after doing radio, at least this type of radio, for 12 years, something like that, that you are responsible for what you are responsible for. And I tell people that all the time. You know, I get the same thing. Oh, we tried to tell so-and-so. They think I'm crazy. And, of course, to their detriment, they sort of just blow it off without going to check to see whether or not we were really right, you know, that type of thing. But beside that, we're responsible for getting through this on our own. And it doesn't make any difference whether anybody else buys into what we think. I mean, look at remember all the controversy over Y2K? Well, we're at the point right now of saying, you know, before you could argue about the possibility of the threat from Y2K, you can't argue about the potential for this threat now. So we've put that argument to bed. Now the question is, are you smart enough or stupid enough to either prepare or not prepare, whichever the case may be? And Americans, if you've noticed since 9/11, we've just sort of gone back to our business as usual type of mode.
Total apathy.
We just want to get on with our life, whatever. And now, you know, you hear even the Democrats were thumping this one during the election. Shouldn't we be concerned about the economy? Well, you know, the economy is in a cycle that we've put it in. It's like going out on an all-night drunk and then coming home and somehow hoping that the hangover isn't going to be there in the morning. Well, the country has been on an all-night drunk. There is no way off of this boat but to go through it. That, however, doesn't sell well politically. And since most Americans don't understand exactly how the monetary system works, they don't quite understand why, so they always turn to government. Ironically, they're turning to the source of the problem to get them out of the problem. And that's why things will not get better. It virtually never does under those situations. It only gets worse. Because if you recall, I remember G. Edward Griffin saying in an interesting interview I heard recently with him, he reminded me that when we created this Federal Reserve System, we created a cartel. And a cartel only acts in the interests of what's good for the cartel, not what's good for the people, despite the fact that the verbiage may be otherwise. And the last 100 years, well, it hasn't been quite 100 years since the Fed came into existence, have shown that it has always acted in the interest of the cartel, not in the interest of the American people. And it will continue to act that way. That's an important thing to always understand about bureaucracies. They will always, always, always act in their own best interest. And so therefore what? Well, you have to understand what's happening. I had a flying instructor one time when I was getting my private ticket, and he had an interesting philosophy. He said, in an emergency, the rules don't count. Try to understand what is happening and then take whatever steps are appropriate to handle the situation. And that's exactly what I would say applies today. Because if you follow everybody, if you follow those rules, and I'm not talking about law breaking, I'm talking about the rules of thinking and thought and that way. If you follow the mentality of the people out there, the herd mentality, you will get caught sharp by this. And frankly, the elite crowd are relying on the fact that enough people will do it because somebody has to be there to be fleeced. Now, I am predicting that only we will have some kind of real economic straits. It would take nothing short of a miracle to stop it at this stage of the game. But then there will be the demonization of those people who were smart enough to see it coming and took some steps to prepare it, because at some point they're going to have to, you know, when governments get in trouble, they become downright greedy about money. And right now you see the internet tax today. The state governments want to impose a sales tax and coordinate sales tax for collecting on the internet. Because what's happened is revenues to them are down, and they desperately, desperately, desperately need cash. So that's what will happen is, and then you will see things such as private pension funds will come into jeopardy. What will happen is we'll go through a couple of yo-yos up and down. This is just one scenario. And then the federal government will come out and say, it'll be the president, and they'll pass something, or the Congress, they'll pass the Economic Retirement Security Act of 2003 or something along those lines. And what they will say is, my gosh, these are perilous economic times. We just have to protect your retirement funds. Look, Social Security's in trouble. If you've got private pensions, we need to do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to require that you keep all, say, 50% or more of your retirement pension fund in some kind of federal instrument. So basically what's going to happen is they will come in, raid the private pension fund, leave an IOU, and, of course, you have the full faith and credit promise of the U.S. government that when the time comes, you'll get your money.
And you'll get your money in dollars, but that may take, $1 million to buy a loaf of bread.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
Exactly what they've done with the people down in Argentina today. And they've said, look, you've had your money in the bank, and, of course, we're not going to give you the money. You can't take your money out, but we're going to give you bonds, and they're redeemable in 5 years in pesos. But, of course, what will the peso be worth at that time? Well, now it's worth 30 cents of what it was, and by then it may be worth maybe a penny of what it was. But you're going to get the number of pesos that you had in the bank. Don't you worry, because we're from the government, and we're here to help you. Of course, the reason that Argentina got into the trouble it did is because the government was spending too much money. It had all of these programs to provide everything for everybody and all sorts of boondoggles, and then it kept getting more and more international debt. What people don't understand is America is the greatest debtor nation in the world today. And, you know, large sums of our national debt are not owned by the American people. We don't owe it to ourselves. We owe it to other countries. And if those other countries start pulling their money out of T-bonds, why, hang on to your hat, because where is the money going to come then to maintain our debt? And, of course, right now we're over $6 trillion national debt. When the interest rate goes up, and it's going to have to go up, what would happen if we had a $6 trillion debt, which we have, and they had to raise the interest rate to 20% to get money to, to perhaps quell inflation? You realize you'd be talking $600 billion just in debt for 20% would be over $1 trillion. These sums of money are just literally unbelievable. But a 20% interest rate would be over $1 trillion simply to meet your debt demands, or meet the index. Pardon me, the interest on your debt. What are your thoughts on that, Karen Lee?
Well, I agree, and what I am going to have to tell you, though, Dr. Stan, is I am going to have to excuse myself from this lovely conversation. I must pick up my daughter.
Well, you go get your daughter and give her our best, okay?
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on tonight, and, John, we will talk.
Okay.
God bless.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Karen Lee. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, we had a cancellation. A regular host for this evening bowed out at the last minute, so John Loeffler was, and Karen Lee were kind enough to come on so we could carry on a conversation, but I think it's an important conversation, trying to get people to realize that significant things are going to happen, and you better be getting your mindset prepared for this. And, of course, if you hope to make a lot of money in the near future, forget it. As far as I'm concerned, unless you are really a speculator and you're willing to begin shorting things, and, of course, remember what they say about when you short, you're selling things that aren't yours, and that old adage, he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison.
Right.
And, of course, the market is driven by fear and greed. And when you, of course, are on the uphill side, you're making money, it's greed. And when it's the downhill side, it's fear. And you don't want to be in that sort of a situation unless you're one of those very unusual people who can tolerate it and likes to live on adrenaline and, of course, not panic. So you need to make your long-range plans and prepare for what happens if we begin to move into a collapse of our economic system, and specifically a collapse in the dollar. Could it happen? Well, it's happened in other countries, and of course, I think the most significant thing right now is the fact that the Islamists want to attack, and I'm talking about now the Islamic radicals, want to attack the financial infrastructure of America. And Osama bin Laden has said that if we can attack their financial system, why, they're not going to be able to have enough time or effort or finances to worry about us. So right now, the Islamic leaders throughout the world, and actually this is being led at least in part by the Islamic leaders in Malaysia, are talking about creating a gold currency, a gold-backed currency that the 1.2 million inhabitants of the Muslim nations will begin dealing with, and they will want to use that as the basis for their dealing with other blocks in the world. And if they suddenly have a gold-backed currency, I would think that everybody would want to have, a gold-backed currency rather than a fiat money system which can be undermined and eroded and destroyed at any time. Now, we've been able to get away with what we've been doing because we have the preeminent currency in the world, the American dollar. But what happens if somebody comes up with a better mousetrap? What happens if somebody comes up with a better currency? They called it the gold dinar, or D-I-N-A-R. What are your thoughts? Have you looked into that at all, John?
Well, it would create a... See, that's... Now you've got to flash that against the background of Iraq, because here's what the bottom line behind Iraq is. It's called oil. The oil supplies that we have, largely due to the fact that environmentalism worldwide has made it prohibitive to go out and explore for new wells and things like that, our supply of oil is going to dry up within the next 10 years. We're not digging new wells, and the current remaining supply, the large preponderance of it, exists in the Middle East. So the whole issue is, in reality, the countries are beginning to look at what's going to happen with oil. It's why Russia's concerned. It's why OPEC is very concerned with this whole situation, because if we do go in and we put a regime in friendly to us, say we oust Saddam Hussein or bring him up for war crimes, trials, whatever, then we will have a regime friendly to the U.S., and guess what? I'm sure they can be persuaded, usually with offers that they can't refuse, to sell us oil at some ridiculously low price. This will undercut OPEC, which, of course, depends almost entirely upon the flow of oil or its revenues into these various countries that are oil kingdoms, and that's what their cartel is all about. So this threatens that. That's how this all ties in together. What is amazing about this, Dr. Stan, is this is not a simple, like I think I heard you say in the last hour, this is not a simple issue. I mean, we have the whole issue of the entire world, Europe and the Middle East and the U.S. and Canada, all looking at the situation of what oil is going to be looking like in just the next 10 years. That's issue number one. Number two is Jerusalem and the fate of it and the fate of the Palestinians. Issue number three, what you would call fundamentalist Islam, is once again in a resurgence mode and determined to resume its own course that it had assumed years ago, and centuries ago, as a matter of fact. That's segment number three. Number four is the globalist aspect, those who believe we need to have global governance, that sovereignty is obsolete. I didn't think this up. You know, this isn't, you know how convenient it is for everybody to yell conspiracy theory when they hear this stuff, but you don't have to go far to find this in what I call the literature, in the published articles or things. The only difference is Peter, Dan, and Tom just aren't telling you about it on the evening news. But it's there. All you have to do is go find it. So that's the next thing. Interesting. Now let's compound it on going up another side. The globalists, the new religious force, is the best way I describe it is global pantheistic socialism. This whole new global governance movement, from its New Age brackets to its actual political brackets, really has a spiritual dimension to it. And this is a syncretistic religion, which says that all religions have equal footing. No religion is better than any other religion, and no religion may assert that it is better than any other religion. So all along, if you read the stuff by Barbara Marx Hubbard and others, there are these little veiled threats contained within this all this talk about wonderful goodness and global unity and harmony and peace on Earth in the age of Aquarius, and that is, doggone it, there are just these little religions out there that are going to have to go. And what might these religions be? Well, there any religion which makes exclusive claim to the exclusion of other religions, and I can think of three, and that's fundamentalist Islam, or what I would call Quranic Islam, Orthodox Judaism, and Biblical Christianity. Those three, sooner or later, were going to have to go. And so now we're setting a precedent. See, what people don't understand is we're locking in place all sorts of precedents right now, which may or may not look too bad to the people right now, especially those who just haven't a clue about what is going on out there. But these precedents, once placed in place, can then be used in future situations with simply redefinitions of the laws and the terms. So it's the Muslims that have to go first, but understand the Jews and the Christians aren't far behind, not in the secular pantheistic mindset. We have to go too.
And, you know, that's really a frightening thing to contemplate, and yet, of course, there's a great deal of truth to this. And I would like to point out, in my humble opinion, and this is simply an opinion, but it's based upon a lot of research, that the war against Saddam Hussein is really not against a war against Saddam Hussein. It's a war against the whole Middle East. I'm reading a fascinating book, and if you really want to understand what's going on, you're not going to get it from Peter, Jane, and Barbara, and Dan. You're going to get it by reading the writings of Joseph Podansky, who's the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Nonconventional Warfare. And, of course, his books, Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America, Attack America and the West, and, of course, his most recent book, The High Cost of Peace, will give you what's really going on in the world, which you'll never get from the American media. And what's really going on is the major forces over in the Middle East are Iran and Saudi Arabia and Syria, and Iraq is really sort of a third-rate player. But what people don't understand is Iran has the nuclear weapons. It's had them for a long time. Why don't they tell the American people that? Why are we talking about, well, Saddam Hussein may have nuclear weapons when Iran has had them for a long time? And, of course, they also have chemical and biological weapons. Iran has an army three times larger than Saddam Hussein. And I think that when we get through with Saddam Hussein, we could very well be looking at going to war with Syria and with Iran and perhaps even with Saudi Arabia. And, of course, when this happens, we're going to be at war with Islam throughout the world. And, of course, we don't want the American people to know what's really being planned. But going to war with Saddam Hussein is totally illogical. I think it is part of a much bigger plan. And with that, of course, will be a terrible, terrible, catastrophic results and terrible human suffering and the death of large numbers of civilians. And I feel, and I'm firmly convinced, that we will see similar things happening here in America today, because we've intentionally created a multicultural society, brought in literally millions of Muslims, and even if only 2 or 3% of them are of the Islamic temperament, they will commit terrible acts of terrorism here in the United States, exactly as Muhammad and his sidekick, Tonto, or whatever you want to call them, have committed here. And they've totally played this thing down, saying there is no Islamic component, just because he was a supporter of Osama bin Laden, just because he supported the terrorist attack on the Twin Towers, just because he is a Muslim fundamentalist, doesn't mean that this had anything to do with the Muslim belief. And I think that if you believe that, you believe probably that what we're seeing now was not planned long before George Bush became the president of the United States.
Well, remember, it's all a matter of definition. That's an important thing to remember. The Holocaust happened as a matter of definition. I always point out the rise of Hitler to power was a legal event, and it came upon a country. What's interesting, Dr. Stan, was the power of denial in the mindset of the people of Germany. Hitler came to power in, I think he was sworn in January of 1933. The elections were in the end of the year. The Wannsee Conference that decided on the Endlösung, which means the final solution, did not happen until 1941. So that was about a decade later. And all during this time, as the indicators got worse, the Jewish population of Germany and some of the other target groups kept hunkering down, thinking, well, you know, it's bad, but this is Germany. They wouldn't do that. Surely they wouldn't do that. See, that was always the thing. And it was that level of denial that, you know, some people think denial is a river in Egypt. but that level of denial was what kept them from saving themselves. Because they waited until it was too late to do anything else. The other interesting part was the role of the churches in Germany. And see, we're facing similar situations today, because what we're facing here is we're facing a major shift in the worldview and the philosophy of the culture. And it is hostile, as I say, to this religion. It may preach tolerance and diversity. If you want to see real intolerance, challenge the diversity of some of these tolerant people, and or challenge the belief system of them. You will see intolerance par excellence on a scale, because the only cardinal sin anymore is to violate the consensus of what is politically correct. So having said all of that, in Hitler's Germany, there was, and this happened in Romania too, after the takeover, I remember in Romania when Richard Vormbran was a rather young pastor there, Hitler would draw a line in the sand, or the church would draw a line in the sand, and Hitler would step over it. And they'd go, oh, well, we really didn't mean to draw it over there. Let's redraw it over here. And Herr Hitler, just assure us you won't step over it here. Well, he continued to step over it. And we know from documents obtained after the war that Himmler intended to go after the Christians as soon as the Jews were done with. So, well, of course, Martin Niemöller's famous statement. Now, what was happened with these churches is every time they ran into another crisis, another group of the church peeled off rather than opposing what was going on and taking their licks. In other words, standing in a time of standing when it was called for. They caved. There were always bright lights. Some of the most amazing things were during, I don't know if you remember the papal encyclical, Brennen der Sorge, with burning concern. It was written by the predecessor to Pius the 12th. And it was the only papal encyclical ever written in German, as opposed to being written in Latin. It was smuggled into Germany and read from every Catholic pulpit on the same Sunday. And you never guess who they entrusted to bring it into the country, Dr. Stan.
Who did they entrust?
The Boy Scouts.
Okay.
Because remember, this group, the Boy Scouts, were already under duress because they were not part of the Hitlerjugend, the Hitler Youth. And so if you weren't a member of that, you were ultimately, most of these organizations faced dissolution. Because Hitler understood one thing, just as the radical leftist educators of our country have understood, that you must get the children and have a controlled environment in which the children can be brainwashed into believing the new politically correct doctrine.
No, but that could never happen here, of course.
It did happen. You know that, and I know that. the funny part is you can actually read some of these early educrats going back to the 50s and the 40s and the 30s, and they're talking in these terms, brainwashing, getting control of them, removing the influence of the parents so that the children can be liberated from the shackles of their parents and their parents' belief and everything. The difference is most teachers have never read this material and understand where it's coming from. So we're seeing the same situation here today where we have lines in the sand. We have a raging war going right now. Our problem isn't a war. Our problem isn't that we don't know what to do or how to survive it. Our problem is convincing the troops that they should even be fighting.
All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes here with John Loeffler. We invite your calls at 464-8295 or out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you, of course, that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you believe in what we're saying, if you believe there's a problem out there, we hope that many of you will decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out across America. We actually have a great new program. It's being heard in Atlanta, Georgia, only half an hour a week, but it's played during drive time, I think from 5 to 5:30. Actually started just last week, the second program today. Some fellow called on the 800 line, and he thought we were trying to be comedians talking about this sort of thing. He didn't think that anybody would think the way we were thinking. He thought it was a satire. And I assured him, of course, it was not a satire. We are deadly serious. So, of course, Atlanta, Georgia, 50,000-watt station. We are having an outreach, and very nice gentleman's financing that area for us at his own expense. So every week from 5 to 5:30, we are heard in Atlanta, Georgia, and hopefully as time goes by, why more and more people will know at least on Wednesday they're going to hear the truth that they're not going to hear elsewhere. And our Saturday program is now heard on Well, about 35, 36 stations, something like that. So, you know, we're gradually making headway, reaching more and more people all the time. But quite frankly, we need your help to do what we do. So if you believe there's a problem, if you believe that behind the political and cultural and ideological war that's being waged in our country, there is a spiritual battle, we hope that many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. And then, of course, I want to mention our conference is going to be held. It's going to be a week from Saturday. That's the 23rd of November, Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And we're just going to be talking about preparation. We're going to be talking about our monetary system. Do you understand that everything in our society is built upon debt? Do you understand we have a currency that's built upon debt, not upon gold, not upon silver, not upon the promise of the American government to redeem it, but upon debt? And what happens when you get a society with a debt that's about, well, according to Don McElveny, about $38 trillion, that's trillion dollars, and as a base for that, you have maybe at the most $100 billion in gold, $100 billion, $38 trillion. Of course, when the music stops, there are not going to be enough chairs there for everybody to get onto. So if you really want to understand the economics of what's going on, if you want to understand the threat of biological warfare, and we have included in this great syllabus, I'm just going through it now, the material I got from Ken Alibak, former number two man in the Soviet biological warfare unit, and then getting into the spiritual aspect of what's going on. Why, of course, we hope many of you will want to join us for the day. It's going to start at 8:45, and doors will open at 8 in the morning and close at 6 in the evening. It's going to be 10 hours. About 9 hours of that will be lectures, 8.5 hours of that. And then, of course, there's going to be a lunch, and but we have to know who's going to be there to make the syllabuses, to have the lunches. So give us a call if you're interested. Give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we hope you can make it. We're going to have to cut off, of course, because we have to know ahead of time, but we've got a few more days, so if you're thinking about coming, call tonight. Again, 1-800-5-448-927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And our guest this evening, John Leffler from Steel on Steel, and of course you can hear him here at KFER every Wednesday from 7 to 8. So we had opportunity to hear him from 7 to 8 and talk to him from 8 to 10, and but I never tire of hearing John or getting his ideas, because they're always right on the cutting edge of what's going on. We were talking about Germany, and certainly one of my favorite books on this subject was written by Erwin Lutzer, the senior pastor at the Moody Church in Chicago, and his book is called Hitler's Cross. And of course, he talks about what it was like with the church in Germany in the 1930s, 1940s, how they used Romans 13 to convince the Christians that they shouldn't speak out against Hitler, because after all, Hitler, you know, pointed out that it says in the Bible that God put our leaders in power, and if you disobey those leaders, why, you're disobeying God. And of course, if God put Hitler in power, how could you possibly speak out against him? So they used Romans 13 to neutralize the people and result in the death, not only of 6 million Jews. They never tell you about the 12 million other who perished. Where can you read about that? Why, in a book called Warrant for Genocide by Norman Cohn, a Jewish scholar who goes into the Holocaust. But in the opening pages, he talks about the 12 million others who perished. When was the last time you heard anybody talking about the 12 million others? Now, do we have a museum for them? No, we don't have a museum for them. We only have a museum for the victims of the Holocaust. But there was a Christian Holocaust as well, because most of the people who perished in the prison camps were by far more than the Jews were the Christians. 12 million died besides the Jews in the prison camp system in Hitler's Germany and have no recognition at all. But in the book, Why Hitler's Cross, Erwin Lutzer told the story about a man coming to him and telling him he'd been in Germany, and I, whether it was or to Lutzer or somebody else, but Lutzer tells the story, and he was a German there, you know, during the war, and of course the train tracks ran right by the back of the church, and so on Sunday morning often they'd hear the trains going by, the freight trains, and of course the Jews were packed into the cattle cars there, being taken to the concentration camps, and they were screaming out. But the Germans didn't want to acknowledge that because they didn't want to feel that they had to take a stand or do something. And so the louder the people would cry, well, the louder the people would sing. So they'd play the music loud and they'd sing. They wouldn't have to hear the cries of the people being taken to their death. And, you know, of course, years later he realized how terrible it had been that the Christians, who could have done something, they were the majority, did absolutely nothing. And because they did nothing, they were responsible, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. A great, great book, Hitler's Cross, must reading for anybody who wants to understand what's going on in America today, because what's happening in America today is like deja vu all over again.
Yeah, well, we when you realize that we as a country, you know, I tell people, well, we've pretty well adopted Marxism, and most people look and they giggle and laugh, and it's like you're saying that gentleman that called up, because when you think of Marxism, you think of Stalin and gulags and that type of thing, Dr. Stan, right? But what Marxism was the collective process of thought in a socialized, collectivized society. And that is what we have now adopted. Liberalism first adopted it, and now conservatism is adopting it as well. They were hijacked. So if we've adopted the same modes of thought that the Bolsheviks used, even though people say we love freedom, but you really don't love freedom here. I could go down the political platforms of each of the parties, and they're more than willing to sell out big parts of the Constitution in the name of whatever. You know, when we talk about gun control, as soon as you say gun control, you're willing to subvert the Second Amendment to the Constitution. Jeepers, if we can bash on the Second Amendment to the Constitution, but we can get the others, what do you think? See? And that's what they don't understand, is if you make it possible to do an end run around the Second Constitution, of course, we don't believe we're doing that. We believe the Constitution, you know, if you're not a strict constructivist type of thing, the Constitution is a living, breathing document that sort of says what we want it to say when we want it to say it. Well, that's no law whatsoever, and that's the situation we're in. Now, if we've adopted this dialectical process of thought, which is what the Bolsheviks did, we've adopted the religious beliefs of this crowd, which is basically an atheistic form of society, why will we end up in any different situation? You take human beings, put them in the same recipe, shake well, bake at 350 degrees, and they'll come out looking the same. It doesn't make any difference. Yeah, we may call it America, we may package it in different values, but it's ultimately the same core process underneath. And that's that same kind of blinding that we were talking about in Germany. The people did not understand what was happening. They did not believe that Hitler was going to do what he said he was going to do in Mein Kampf. They did not believe it. They thought it was political rhetoric. And that is what stops us from doing anything today, from understanding the type of peril that we're in. And this affects everybody. It affects liberals. It affects conservatives, because at the core, it takes away freedom. And that's what I always point out. Every time you vote for gun control, you vote for restrictions on freedom of speech. You vote for restrictions on property. You vote for all of those freedoms that were important. Why? Because you're doing an end run around one of the bills, one of the rights. And if you can end run one of them with regulation, you can end run them all. And that's the bottom line on it.
Well, you know, really, one of the things that really bothers me so much, John, is that there's so many good people who are rallying behind our fearless leader today, our fearless president, who really has little difficulty with the English language and pronouncing things properly, but our leader who is going to take this strong stand against Saddam Hussein. And, of course, Osama bin Laden, we're going to get him dead or alive. We haven't got him either dead or alive. And that's because they really never really tried. But, of course, we couldn't let the American people know that because Osama bin Laden is the modern-day, Edmund Goldstein of 1984. But under any circumstances, why, so many people are saying, oh, yeah, well, the president must know something about Saddam Hussein that we don't know. The reason he's so anxious to get after him is obviously he knows something that we don't know. And so we've got to back him. We've got to go to war with Saddam Hussein. Have people forgotten how terrible wars are? I mean, this is not something you see on a television screen, a little blood here or there. I mean, we're talking about human suffering. Why are so many Americans anxious to get into a war in the Middle East? Certainly Saddam Hussein was not behind the 15 Saudi Arabians who attacked the World Trade Center. I mean, I think there were two from the United Emirates and one from Yemen and one from Egypt, something like that. But 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. So why are we going to war with Saddam Hussein? Well, he may have nuclear weapons. Well, if he does, why, he probably certainly got a lot of the technology from us when we gave him the biological and chemical weapons, and we did give him the biological and chemical weapons. And anybody who doubts that, we have a book written a half a dozen years ago by Seymour Hersh. In fact, we have the world supply of these books, no more available. It's called Against All Enemies. And it was so obvious in the mid-1990s that we'd given Saddam Hussein the chemical and biological weapons. We're so horrified that he has. And, of course, there's something seriously wrong with this scenario. But what bothers me, John, why are so many Americans rallying behind this war? Is that they're so incapable of thinking of the implications or the consequences of undertaking a preemptive strike? Because if we can justify a preemptive strike against Saddam Hussein, couldn't other countries justify a preemptive strike against us?
Sure, but that would be an unjustified act of aggression. See, what's happening is that's what would be claimed anyway. We're making this up as we go along, and that's what's bad. We keep hearing about the rule of law. We used to hear about that during the Clinton administration. And yet, if you notice, law is not getting any precedence. Law is simply being tortured into saying anything that we need to have it said at any given point in time. That's the bad part. The definition of the American Patriot Act of what a terrorist is and what you can do, if you're declared an enemy combatant, a terrorist, well, suddenly your civil rights don't apply. Hello? I can't believe we're even swallowing this at the congressional level, because it's so easy to see that all you have to do then is broaden the definition of terrorist, and suddenly all sorts of people are terrorists.
But, John, the New York Times is saying exactly what you're saying. The Washington Post is saying exactly what you're saying, so that you've got to be wrong, because the other side is taking the pro-liberty side, and we're their bad guys. We don't want to be on the side of the New York Times and the Washington Post. And the communists are saying exactly the same thing. They're absolutely right. And it's sort of like a lot of people, want the war because Barbara Streisand's against it. They don't understand how they're being manipulated.
I mean, I watched Alan Keyes night after night before his show ended. He kept asking the hardball question on this issue. And he said, here's the deal. He said, we had a concept in our country that you should be able to prove that you're innocent until proven guilty. And he said, if by simply declaring you an enemy combatant, how is the rule of law preserved if you don't have a chance to prove? He said, where is the vehicle and the platform for proving that you are not an enemy combatant and therefore not worthy of having all of your property seized and losing all of your civil rights and being thrown in jail for an indefinite period of time in violation of habeas corpus? And he was right. Where do you get to prove, if somebody just grabs you, that you're not an enemy combatant? You see, that you're not eligible for this deprivation of rights, which I don't believe you're eligible for anyway. The second real disturbing trend that we're seeing is that of what I call the ignoring of court rulings and things of that nature, is that we're seeing more and more, especially in the area of forfeiture, for example, whereby a court will actually decide something. He'll tell a sheriff's department, you shouldn't have seized the guy's property. He goes to court. They go through all the hoops. He proves, give the property back. And the sheriff will say, no, I don't think we're going to do that. Now think about this. the sheriff's department is not carrying out the dictates of the court. What happened to this rule of law we keep hearing about?
But you see, we're seeing this actually with the current administration. George Bush has told government employees not to fill Freedom of Information Act requests,
right.
Because, of course, he will back them up if they don't. We're seeing the Justice Department, when ordered by various courts to provide the information upon which they're holding one of the combatants, one of these so-called enemy combatants, showed the proof that he is guilty, or at least that there are legitimate charges against him, they're defying the courts and they're saying, we're not going to do it. On the Padilla, they've asked for information on him, why he can't have a lawyer, why he can't have a habeas corpus. They say, we're not going to abide by the rule of the court. So what you're seeing, and what the Americans really don't understand, what the Office of Homeland Security about is creating a constitutional dictatorship and creating an executive branch of government that is not answerable to the courts or to the Congress. That's what Senator Harry Byrd was debating about on the floor of the Senate, and why they held up, at least in the Senate, the Office of Homeland Security, because they said, look, you're doing away with checks and balances. You're setting up an organization here. Congress will no longer have oversight of intelligence. Congress will no longer have the right to withhold appropriations bills, and withhold money. You're doing away with whistleblower protection for anybody in this who sees corruption or murder or whatever it would be. They would have no protection if they came forward and revealed what the executive branch of government is doing. Don't you understand that you're destroying this delicate balance we have between the three branches of government? Never once is this mentioned by the major media. The only place you'll see it mentioned would be maybe in the Washington Times, but the rest of the media totally suppresses this fact, and we're told, it's a fight over, civil service, and they're trying to break the unions. Bush is trying to break the unions, and he doesn't want to have civil service rules. It has nothing to do with that. It had to do with the whole structure of our government, and certainly doing away with the right of people within government to report total corruption at the highest levels of our nation.
Yeah, and meanwhile, much to my distress, I listen on some of the Christian circuits, and you hear Jay Sekulow and everybody, we got to get in line, so-and-so. I heard Sean Hannity, if you're opposed to this, you're helping the enemies of the country. I keep thinking, what the heck is the Constitution all about?
Well, I know when I'm... I love Dr. Jim Dobson. I think he's a great American, but when he and David Barton and Chuck Colson say, we got to get in behind the president, because he obviously knows what he's doing, I'm saying, patriotism is not the support of the president. Patriotism is the support of the Constitution and doing what's right. And there is no justification for the executive branch of government taking us into war. Only the Congress can declare war, and Congress refuses to declare war. They just say to the president, you've got all the power. You go ahead and do whatever you want to, and we won't say anything. And how many American boys are going to die in another non-declared war? And who will be responsible for their deaths?
It'll reduce the surplus population. Remember that from Charles Dickens. So, I agree with you.
Well, I think we're in real trouble out there. If you agree or disagree, maybe you think that we should be blindly obedient to the executive branch of government, just like they were in Hitler's Germany. Give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It was said in Germany when things were going badly. Obviously Hitler doesn't know about what's really going on, about all the people being rounded up and taken to the camps. If Hitler only knew, this wouldn't be going on. And I'm sure that, the trouble was that Hitler did know exactly what was going on. They just didn't want the German people to know that. And, of course, all the excesses of the Gestapo. I wonder how many Americans ever heard of the story of Heinrich Mueller, who was the head of the Gestapo, who was actually brought to America and given a nice plush job and allowed to live out his days here, or of the other Nazi scientists and war criminals who were brought to America under Operation Paperclip, or whom the OSS helped to escape to South America, where they lived out the rest of their lives and the ill-gotten gains. Were we really anti-German, or did we create the best enemy money could buy and then use this war to justify bringing in the United Nations and moving us ever closer to world government, and use the war to get people used to paying income taxes so we could have enough money to finance what was planned in the future, and that would be the welfare state? And it was during the Second World War when began the withholding tax. So it wasn't so painful to pay your income tax. And not only that, but you even got money back at the end of the every year. Government would give you money back. Never mentioning it was your own money that they were giving back to you. Well, we've got Dara calling from New Orleans. Hi. Oh, is this Tara calling?
Yes.
Hi, Tara. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. It's good to hear from you.
I'm so glad to talk to you. Hello, John.
Hi.
You've educated me for the last 3 years or so, and have made me a very smart woman.
No, I really got you whacked out, right?
Tara is actually a lawyer who teaches at school and married to a minister there in New Orleans, and they have a ministry just one block off of Bourbon Street. So anyway, how are things going down there at in New Orleans?
I don't know if you got my letter. But,
I did.
One of our street ministers, he got a judge fought him and punished him for his Christian beliefs, which is very interesting.
And are you going to be able to take that case to court and get rid of that judge and expose him for the anti-Christian bigot that he is?
She is, yes. The bigot
okay.
Yes, in fact, we have ACLU doing that for us. So
you got the ACLU on your side. Well, once in a while, the ACLU does something right, really.
Exactly. And that was a suggestion by an attorney who fights hard, because it was a divorce court matter. But also, we're now being taken off of Bourbon Street. On Halloween night, we were asked to leave Bourbon.
Well, of course, why would you want to be there with all the Satanists anyway?
Right. Well, I'm sure the Satanists, were throwing curses on us and stuff like that. However, right after we walked away, someone was killed within the block that we were in. So, you know, as I always say, I think that, you know, the Christians have an effect on those spirits, and the spirit of murder was just released as soon as we were asked to leave. But I wanted to, y'all expound so well on the checks and balances thing, and I'm going to tape this and give it to my students. But, you know, I don't think most Americans understand checks and balances anymore. You know, I have college students, and I have to explain to them what that is. And, you know, civics courses must not teach that anymore because they don't understand. And I used to rail against the judiciary for their activism, but you're right. I mean, it's become a dictatorship through executive orders.
Now, maybe our listeners out there don't understand the checks and balances, but we had an executive, a judicial, and an executive branch of executive, judicial, and legislative branch of government, and each was there to check the other one so no one could become all-powerful. And, of course, the danger of the Office of Homeland Security is why it gives the executive branch of government, with 170,000 employees combining 22 different agencies, total power answerable to nobody but to the Fuhrer, I mean the president himself.
Exactly. And I have a student who's a police officer. I'm sorry.
John, did you want to say something?
No, sorry.
Okay, go ahead, Tara.
I have a police officer student who's an Orleans Parish police officer, but he's on the federal task force, and we go round and round on this Homeland Security thing, you know, because he's been brainwashed to be, you know, and I've explained the enemy, I've had him write a paper on the enemy combatant issue and stuff like that, but I mean, he's just young and gung-ho, and I like him a lot, but he's going to become very frightening when he's so happy to be answering to the federal government rather than, you know, the municipality.
Well, what you really need to do, Tara, is get him schooled in the Constitution. The trouble is they don't understand the Constitution or the fact it was a restrictive covenant to limit the power of the federal government. Because whenever government is not limited, it always becomes tyrannical. And that was the secret of America. It was limited federal government. And matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be taken care of at the state and the local level. That's the good.
Exactly.
That's the 45th of the Federalist Papers. You better get him reading the Federalist Papers. He probably doesn't even know the difference between a Republican and democracy, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Well, then you've got to educate him.
Right. I'm just saying that this younger generation, if they're under 30, they have no concept. You know, and I barely had a concept. You know, and I'm a 40. But you know, we have to. Yes. And I'm trying out desperately out there with the few students that I get to teach them. You know. What if, and I did explain to him, what if you get fired and then you're described as an enemy combatant? Swartz, a young fellow, and that did make him think. I mean, you have to put it to people personally. What if you are the one that gets described as the enemy combatant?
Right. I don't. You need to understand that all of the, like you say, the under 30 crowd that have been raised in the government school system have come out with this whole dialectical process of no absolute and only relative values. As a result, they actually don't have the mental faculties to allow them to think critically about this type of thing. And as Dr. Stan said, nor did they receive a classic education. There has been hostility among academia toward patriotism and toward letting people know, because the academics, at least those who designed the curriculum, were concerned that we move them towards a more Marxist socialist position. And so they've been underplaying that systematically. You can find this as you go through the educational literature. So he just doesn't know. You know, he does not understand that he has no knowledge of this. And you're right. The only way you do is, well, what happens when they label you an enemy combatant? Where will your rights be? Duh. But he doesn't understand. And that this is a bad idea.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tara, I'm so glad you're down there teaching those young people in New Orleans. And, you know, the ability to educate people and to give them that vision that they're going to need for the difficult times that lie ahead. Anything we have, why, you're welcome to copy and give to him. And why don't you maybe give him my October newsletter? I think that is the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser there before the Senate Select Committee, and ask him why he didn't read about this in the newspaper. Do you get the newspaper, Tara?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Copy that October news paper and get him to read it and ask him, you know, are we getting the truth? Do you really think, you know, just try to get him to think, hey, we're out of time. God bless you. Give my best to your husband.
I sure will.
Thanks so much.
And
bye-bye. And John, I want to thank you so much for being willing to come on and share this 2 hours with us. It's always fun.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless.
Night.
Okay, fine. And this is Dr. Stan just asking you to pray for America, to pray for our leaders, and remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Balance and Karen needs just a little.